I'm Celeste Headlee. This is On Second Thought. Atlanta's demographics are in flux. A new study from Georgia State University took a very comprehensive look at the metro area over the past 45 years, and it found the city is more diverse, more educated, and more wealthy than ever before. That's good news. The bad news is the city has lost 5% of its affordable housing units every year since 2012. With us to talk about this is Ryan Gravel. He was the founder of Atlanta's Beltline. Now he heads up the Atlanta City Design Project. Welcome back, Ryan.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Allison Johnson is a member of the Housing Justice League. That group advocates for affordable housing and tenant protections. Hi, Allison.
Hi.
And also with us is Andy Schneggenberger, right?
That's right.
An affordable housing advocate and developer in Atlanta. He serves on the Beltline Affordable Housing Advisory Board. Hi, Andy.
Good morning.
It's hard to know where to start because there's so much packed into some of these changes happening. But let me start with one of the most basic questions that I hear often when we talk about things like gentrification and demographic changes, which is, what's wrong with gentrification? And I'm going to let you all take a stab at this. Because when you look at the statistics and it says, I'm not even talking about race here. I'm just talking about the fact that Atlanta residents are wealthier, that they're more educated, that often they're business owners. Why is that a bad thing, Ryan?
Well, it's not the same people. I mean, I think you have to, I don't even like the word gentrification. If we talk about economic displacement, we talk about cultural displacement, I think those are more specific kinds of terms. And so, you know, they might be more educated, more wealthy, but it's a different group of people than the people who have been living here for so long.
You mean we're booting one group of people out and replacing them?
Yes.
Allison, do you want to add to that?
It's not like people are just getting new jobs and, you know, being entrepreneurs and making, building generational wealth for themselves. I mean, there is some of that, of course, but I mean, primarily, it's a different group of people.
I agree. It's totally a different group of people that comes into the communities that for generations people have held down through the lean of things. And when things are changing and the market is directing people in a different direction, it's not okay to displace or remove people that have been in these communities forever.
Why isn't it okay?
Because people who have been in these communities deserve to stay in these communities. They have built these communities. They have families. They live, work, worship, play in these communities and have been for years. They've been screaming for economic development, for equitable, affordable housing in these communities for decades. And it's not okay when people come in and just decide this is where they want to reside, and we don't know for how long. But these are people's lives and people's families that have lived here for generations, and they deserve the right to remain in their communities without people dictating when they should move away from their communities.
And Andy, why, I mean, whatever your feelings may be about the term gentrification, when it comes to a city itself, why would a city want to battle gentrification? Why not feed into it so you bring in wealthier individuals?
Well, I think that's sort of the market dynamic, right?
Right.
And you want to increase your tax base. You want to improve
right.
the quality of life in communities, right? But I think the primary challenge for gentrification and the reason why it stirs up the passions is that for lower-income folks, people that don't have resources, it happens involuntarily, right? They don't have a choice. And as Allison mentioned, people, when they've been living in a community for a while, that's home, right?
Right.
And to be faced with a situation where suddenly you cannot live there anymore because you can't afford to for reasons that are beyond your control, market forces that are coming in and changing the situation where you don't have the ability to adapt, to stay, to figure out, you know, how to make it work for your household or your family, you have to leave. That's the problem, I think.
Let's hear this comment from Georgia State sociology professor Deirdre Oakley when she was talking about redevelopment and how that drives residents out of a neighborhood, which is really what we're talking about.
If you own a home and you're of a modest income, and property values are going up all around you, you might think that this is a good thing in terms of equity in your house. But if you can't afford the increased taxes, you can have a lien put on your house, and then you can't sell it. So it puts people in a situation where they just can't afford to live there. If you're renting a property and the landlord has to pay extra taxes, it means that your rent is going to go up so the landlord can pay the taxes.
Now, we have two people here who are connected in some way with the Beltline. And it looks from the research that we have that the Beltline is driving some of this increase in property taxes. It is unintentionally forcing some people out of their houses. So let me talk with you first, Ryan, about how we can, do we have a moment here to stop that from happening?
Yes. I want to be clear, though, that it's not the Beltline that's pushing people out. It's the economic forces that are around the Beltline that are creating these challenges. You know, it's not like the Beltline is literally going around pushing people out of their houses.
Right.
And the other piece is that the economic forces, this isn't rocket science. This is happening everywhere. Every city across the country, the Beltline may shape the geography of where those pressures are happening in Atlanta. It may shape the amplification of it in some locations, but it's not unique to the Beltline. It's not unique to Atlanta. And so it's important to understand that the challenge is the economic forces. And, you know, the answer is not to not improve communities. The answer is not to not build trails and parks and grocery stores and attract jobs. That's not the answer, to hold communities down just to keep them affordable. We have to, that's why I want to be very specific about the term gentrification. Like, we need, if the problem is economic, then we need to address those economic problems directly. And there are lots of solutions. Again, it's not rocket science. You talk to Andy and other housing experts, everybody, you know, Allison, we know what the answers are. We're just not doing it. And so there's a lot of room for new people. You talk about attracting new people to the city. That's great. We have a lot of room for a lot more people. But it just can't come at the expense of the people who are here, the people who made this attractive place and to live in over all these years.
Andy, what kind of power do you have? I mean, you are with the Housing Justice League. Allison is with the Housing Justice League, but you're on the Beltline Affordable Housing Authority, right? I mean, you're on the board there. What kind of power do you have to protect land property owners and tenants?
None. The Beltline Affordable Housing Advisory Board is, the last two words in that title are the most important. I think it's an advisory board, right? We give recommendations to how the dollars that are in the Beltline Affordable Housing Trust Fund might be used. Those recommendations may or may not be accepted and put into practice. But if I may, I'd like to comment on the, you know, your prior question. I believe it's about embracing a strategy of managing improvements in quality of life and the economic factors that Ryan was talking about in a way that ensures that we can have mixed income communities going forward. Because we know that there's particular value for having that kind of diversity in a community, right? It's better for educational outcomes. It increases quality of life for everybody across the board. There are real...
Actually, it lowers your heart rate. It extends your life.
Yeah. Right. I mean, pick a demographic, a benefit, right? A metric. And in general, they're positive across the board from a mixed income community perspective, right? And that's what gentrification seems to work against, right? When a tidal wave of improving property values and increased property taxes sort of pushes things in a community so quickly that there isn't generally, typically, in the way we sort of approach these things now anyways, there's not an effort to, a real concerted effort anyways, to kind of reverse the engineering of that somehow and ensure that there's the retention of some affordability in a neighborhood so that there can be a mixed income community.
Or it doesn't happen fast enough. The market moves faster than that.
Right, yes.
Which brings us to you, Allison. In April, we actually spoke to some of the people that were protesting redevelopment plans at Turner Field. So let's take a listen to one of them.
My name is Queen Evelyn Clemens, and I'm a resident here in Mechanicsville since 1964. I was living right here on Windsor Street at the FedEx building, where it's right here now. My grandfather Henry Reed and my grandmother Willie Mae Reed was living there, and that was 1964 when I was born. So I want to be a part of the movement. I definitely don't want to be pushed out, and I don't want them to be pushed out just because they're not here to be heard.
So what are these solutions, Allison? How do we protect Queen Evelyn Clements?
Well, I think a couple of things that I just want to, I may have to go back just a little bit. I'm seventh generation in People's Town, and we originally came from Buttermilk Bottoms. And my family was...
Where was Buttermilk Bottoms?
It's right where people call the old Fourth Ward now. It's right at the bottom.
It's under the Civic Center.
Yeah, under the Civic Center. And my grandfather was living there. He was a butler for a family in Ansley Park. And they were displaced and moved right up the street onto Boulevard, where Old Fourth Ward is now. And then they were displaced by the highways, only to move into Summerhill and were displaced by the Atlanta Fulton County Stadium. So here we are again. So to keep folks like Evelyn, myself, my children in those communities, there's got to be some type of equitable development that is going to allow for long-term residents to be transformative from rental into home ownership. And when I say that, and people are always thinking we're just talking about 0 to 30% of the affordability range. I'm talking about the housing affordability that is affordable to people at all income levels. But the most need that is unmet, and we've got to be honest, is 0 to 30%. And a lot of people who've been there for a
month. 0 to 30% of what?
Of the area median income. And a lot of people who are talking about being displaced, who are actually being threatened by displacement, are those people who are making or income earning incomes in those ranges. And we are going to be the most vulnerable people to be pushed out of these communities. So we've got to be able to have access to affordable houses. We've got to have access to being able to manage our property taxes for those who are earning or at a fixed income who are not going to be able to pay their property taxes, as you've just seen the assessments that's just come out. So we've got to be able to make sure that there's retention there. And it's got to be a focused area on long-term residents as well.
Right. And what you're referring to is the fact that a number of property tax bills just came and people were stunned
Absolutely.
To see how high they were. Some people cannot pay those. Let's hear one more Atlanta resident who is demonstrating at Turner Field in April.
My name is Susan Taylor. I'm here because I have been a member of the People's Town Summerhill community for a long time. I've experienced several different kinds of urban renewal and gentrification efforts that have never made way for the people who live here.
So, Ryan, is there a solution to that? The city says about those property tax bills, look, the property values went up. You know, we don't influence the assessments. That's what the assessment is. The houses are worth more. The property taxes are higher. How do you solve that?
You get a room full of all the housing experts in the city, who I'm not among them, and get the answer. I mean, there's lots of answers to that. There are lots of things that we do here that other counties do across the region, that other cities do across the country. There are answers to those. I'm not the housing expert.
Right, but you're coming down to design it. And can you design a city so these problems don't arise?
The real issue is that we have to set an aspiration and vision for our city that includes everybody, that we fall in love with a vision for ourselves and for this place that we live that includes everybody. And then if we love that and if we want that, then follow through on those aspirations and all the really hard work that it will take to achieve it. But if you look at Atlanta's contribution to the world, which is the legacy of the civil rights movement, it is our modern identity as a city. It is the foundation on which all of our economic and cultural prosperity has happened to date. That's why Atlanta has been successful. We owe it to that. We have an opportunity and an obligation to live up to that promise, what Dr. King called the beloved community, which I know is getting a lot of people talking about it right now, but that is our greatest sort of aspiration. It's going to be hard, but it's also possible. And there are just things that we have to do. And the economic forces that we're talking about are the most powerful and urgent, especially, as Allison said, for people who are at the lowest end of the economic spectrum. We just have to do it. And in order to do it, then we all as individuals, as residents, as communities, have to speak up and ask our elected officials and our corporate business leaders and everybody else to advocate for that vision, for that future. We can do it. We just have to do it.
That's Ryan Gravel of the Atlanta City Design Project. We also spoke with Allison Johnson, who's a member of the Housing Justice League and a member of the Peoplestown Summerhill community that we've been hearing from. And Annie Schneggenberger is an affordable housing advocate and developer in Atlanta. If your neighborhood has changed, do you like the changes that have come to you? We'd love to hear from you. You can tweet us, you know that, at OST Talk, or just call us and leave a message at 404-500-9457. Ryan and Andy and Allison, thank you all so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.